pretty hard few, this one. Look, I'm so close. Look at that. Isn't that incredible?
That is incredible.
It's incredible.
What's been going on this week, Stukes?
What's been going on? Well, what hasn't been going on? A lot. What's been going on? Well, look, I haven't gone to the toilet yet this morning, and it's now 12:29. So, look, we'll soldier on and hope for the best, yeah?
Yeah.
I've been watching a lot of TV.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of TV. The other week I talked about the Society of the Stone. There's a documentary that's accompanying it now. And I've tried to watch it a few times, but the subtitles, I'm fine with subtitles, but I really need to be in the mood to, like, read. So I haven't watched that yet, but I have finished season one and two of Reacher. Awesome.
Uh-huh.
I really like Reacher, the TV show Reacher.
Right, yes, yeah. I understand.
I really like it.
Yes, I understand. Remember from RoboCop? Yes, I understand.
Remember stay that? In school. Is that RoboCop?
Yes. Stay in school. There's no... Why are we doing Arnie? He's more like, yes, I understand. There's like a...
It's I don't
a
think RoboCop was more, I understand. He wasn't...
He was. Yes, I understand.
He wasn't fitter, happier, more productive.
That's not what I'm doing. That is this voice that I will do now.
But that sounds like that voice.
Fitter, happier, more productive.
Better sleeping 3 days a week.
This is, should we just watch it real quick? The only podcast that will quote RoboCop and Radiohead in the same 10 seconds. I am Dr. Radiohead. I didn't go to
Dr. Radiohead.
112 years of Radiohead school to be called Tom York. Thank you very much. And in the blue corner is the Raging Cajun. It's the woman with the steaming Cleveland cleavers. Golf with the Kelly. Big whoop. What a fun about it.
Jack Reacher is a bit of fun.
Yeah?
It's a bit of fun.
That's what you keep telling me. Well, you went off and watched it without me.
It's just, well, I'm not going to wait for you because you fucking...
I don't want to wait to watch Jack Reacher.
You're a dickhead. I think it's because I can't be bothered.
Oh, mate, I'm fucking sweating like a fucking sweat box over here, mate.
I think it's because it's when I'm working, it's good to have something on in the background that's like, you know.
Yeah, there's your tax dollar hard at work, ladies and gentlemen.
Shut up. Don't tell me where I worked again. Fucking hell. Jesus.
Could be anywhere. It's the ABC. She works at the ABC.
No, I don't.
She's taking over from Ida Buttrose at the ABC.
No, I'm going to have a bunch of boomers messaging me going, not my ABC.
Bring Rosehaven back.
Yeah, I mean.
I mean, that would be good.
It's just like. Like, yeah, it's like the shows like, I mean, we're biased, but there's shows like that are, you know, well written and really great and really casting lots of stuff. I was in one episode, whatever.
Casting was really good on that episode.
No, but like, it's amazing how you can have something that's like, and it's sharp. Like, you rewatch like episodes of Rosehaven, it's like, just, it's jokes.
Yeah.
No line is without meaning, like everywhere they could put a joke, and it's just so hard to find stuff like that now where it's like jokes. Like Arrested Development would do that. Everything was a joke, every line, every step was something, you know.
The first two seasons of Arrested Development,
yeah,
and then it gets a real dicey.
Yeah, it's just hard to get, like, it's just so much easier now to do something that's like thriller or drama based and then have it be funny, because if you set out to do something 100% funny, I don't think people don't put enough work into the jokes and making it funnier.
Comedy is inherently risky. So like from a business point of view, right, because comedy is subjective to most people, when people are pitching it, I'm sure you see it in Netflix. You just got to look at the Netflix algorithms. They'll put like a stand-up special up because it costs them fucking nothing to do that. But when was the last time that there was a Netflix comedy show?
Yeah. Like drama's drama, thriller is thriller, everyone agrees.
I'm sure people come comedy at me with like, what about this? What about that?
Yeah.
But like actual Netflix shows that they make, it's all stuff like One Piece, which is like people in a family in India and a family in Russia could watch this and everyone, you know, like...
Damien, the bear that we've talked about a lot on the show was nominated in the best comedy category.
Yeah, that's insane to me.
Which is really tells you what people think about comedy. Comedy, the bear. So that hour-long episode where the mum is having a bipolar breakdown and like... That, you know, all the arguing, that's there comedy.
There are funny moments in
it's
the bear.
It's not a funny show.
No. I'm not saying it is.
No, I'm agreeing with you.
But there are light moments in it, you know, like, and, but no, it's not a fucking comedy. I'm talking about like all places like Netflix do is buy old sitcoms for billions of dollars and then just leave them in their library, like Seinfeld, Friends, you know, like, but I don't, outside of the UK where like Channel 4 and the BBC will just constantly, humor's a big part of life in Britain. Like,
yeah, but everyone, in Australia.
Like having been there a tiny bit of my life, everyone is funny. It is one of those things where like the fucking pub landlord's funny, your taxi driver's funny, the chick at Tesco's funny. Comedy's a big part of their like creative history as well, like Python and all that, you know, the Goon Show.
I know, yeah.
Australia, for some reason, even though we have extremely funny people and there's shows that we, Kath and Kim, The Late Show, like Rosehaven, there are shows that are really funny, but for some reason it just isn't as big a part. And we love talking about how laid back and funny we are, but I don't think we are, like...
Because we don't back ourselves.
There are very funny people in Australia, but as a populace, I don't think we're funny at all.
I don't think
we're a pretty uptight bunch of people.
I don't think that the Australian people back Australian comedy enough.
No.
And I don't think the people that give money to TV shows, they don't back comedy enough in this country.
Because
I'll give you a story.
Risky, I think it's a risky – I think they think it's a riskier investment to invest in a comedy rather than like a drama. Because you can look at a drama script and go – here's the high point. Here's the beats.
And everyone
agrees. This is where everyone's going to cry. It's a good story.
And everyone agrees and it's mediocre. Who cares, right?
Yes.
But with comedy, if it's 10 people in the room, two people are going to go, I don't get it, and they won't put money in it. Can I give you a little showbiz story?
Mm-hmm.
One day I was I probably told you this story before. I was in Tassie doing a bunch of gigs and myself and the host and the headliner, I don't know if I can say his name because I don't want to get back to him. But he was someone who was very prevalent in the 90s and 2000s.
Conor Federer.
No. anyway.
Humphrey Bieber.
No.
Okay. Sorry. Keep going.
And we were driving from Hobart to Launceston for gigs.
Mm-hmm.
And this person was talking about there was a TV show that came out and he was asked to do it and he said no. And he's like, and they just threw money at people. He's like this, and he goes, if there's any, this is the, like the epitome of Australian comedy, sketch comedy in Australia. This is it. This is what it is. What happened was, I think it was on Foxtel.
Oh, I know the show you're talking
about. What's the show called?
It had Magna on
it. Yeah, Magna, Gina, like Shane Jacobson, Stephen Curry.
Shane Jacobson,
Yep. Oh, what was it called? Anyway.
Sketched. Right? Wasn't
it maybe it was
like that?
Called something dumb like Sketched or whatever. Anyway, so it was a sketch show, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if it was on.
I never watched a minute of it, and I love sketch comedy, and I would have had Foxtel at the time
right.
as well.
And I've got there was people on it who I'm mates with who I think are great.
Yeah.
And I know that they're great, and this story will tell you why as well. Anyway, so basically, I think it was Foxtel. Foxtel said, okay, we have this amount of money, maybe $6 million to make a sketch show. Go do it. And they gave it to a producer. And the producer went on his personal Facebook and went, hey, I'm going to make a sketch comedy show. Show me, give me some, like to his mates, his family or whatever. Can you get on this thread, show me a bunch of like sketch comedy. Like upload, God. Like give me some links. So his mates are there, you know, putting on clips of Kath and Kim and The Late Show or Skid House or all that sort of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So here is someone who got millions of dollars to make a sketch comedy show, has no experience in what sketch comedy is, so far so that he reached out to his hive mind on fucking Facebook and Aunt Mary is like, I like this show and like puts a little clip, you know, YouTube clip, YouTube clip. And it's just, you know, a really good, you know, just a bunch of clips of, you know, funny Australian things.
Mm.
Obviously, someone's put in a clip of the castle on there because then Stephen Curry's on the show.
Yeah.
Someone's put a clip of
Kenny.
Gina Reilly's on the show. Magda Sabansky, because they've done Kath and Kim.
Yeah.
So this person, what they've done is they have used the amount of money that they had, thrown obscene amounts of money at people to be in it because in their mind they're like, well, the names are here, so people will watch because the names are in it.
Yeah.
And the people they got to write for it are there was a mixture of very, very old school comedy writers like back the 90s who are very out of date.
Mm.
Who you should not be giving them writing jobs anymore because they are, they're the kind of people that, you know, like they'll do a joke about Facebook, like today. They'll write a joke about Facebook getting, and you getting poked. That's the kind of, which is a sketch that was on there. Anyway. But then you had a mix of other comedians who are really good. So Dave O'Neill was a writer on there.
Mm-hmm.
And even I don't know if this was a public thing that Dave said or something he personally said, where, but I think it's okay to say it. But someone like Dave, who I highly respect, he's very great, he's awesome.
Hmm.
He would write a sketch, and it was like, and it was other people I know in that room who were very good. They'd write a sketch, and it was like very fucking, you know, it was funny, but it was also like, you know how sometimes it's like things are safe. Definitely not safe, bordering on, you know, like really fun. And producer will come in, obviously no sense of humor, and go, nah, and it would always just stop. So all the good stuff that they were like, come on. And I think I remember a story where Dave's like, dude, listen to us. We're doing comedy we're out there. Trust us. You need to trust us. And just would kibosh it and be like, oh, can you do something about – so they would say, so write a sketch about Facebook, write a sketch about mum and dad, write a sketch about a boomer, write a sketch like a real estate agent. Like that's how it worked. And, I mean, obviously the show didn't work went for like one season or whatever it was. But that's how – so that was – that's the last – really the last sketch comedy show that was commissioned by a network in Australia was a guy who didn't know about comedy. And just, but the reason why people like Gina Reilly and, you know, Stephen Curry were in it is because they got paid an obscene amount of money to be in it. And if you're going to work on a show, it's like 10 episodes, 12 episodes, whatever. It's 2 months of your life. I don't know how much money we're talking, but it was a lot. Like, you just fucking do it because you'd be able to, like, you're going to have to work for the rest of the year or you can just do creative projects. I don't know. It just seems, it's really sad thinking about that story.
The problem with almost everything in Australia at the moment is that it's run by guys who went to like St. Kevin's or Xavier. Yeah. It's all part of the same, like dads get their sons and daughters jobs and blah, blah, blah. Mm. So no one gets jobs on credit. Or it's like footballers and cricketers.
Yeah.
Like everyone who runs the AFL is an ex-footballer. And you're like, shouldn't like someone with a business degree be running that? Nah, we'll get Brendan Gale who played 257 games in the ruck for the Tigers. He'll be right.
But then
there's this story that Declan Fay, comedy writer, tells about working at Triple M, where the head of the sales department at Oz Stereo came into work on a Monday morning in full fatigues, army fatigues with like fucking camouflage makeup on and a helmet, a pith helmet and shit. And Declan and his writing partner, or you know, one of his mates, Nick Maxwell, were like, Steve, what's going on? Why are you dressed like that? And this guy, head of sales at Oz Stereo, was like, because we're at fucking war, mate. We're at war. What's the name of the other fucking radio? There's Oz Stereo and like Australia Radio or whatever.
Yeah, no.
Because we're at fucking war with Australia Radio. There's another sign of how uncreative people are in the Australian. Like every fucking company, all the radio companies are called Oz Stereo, Australia Radio. Mm. But like, you know what I mean? Like it's just really fucked. Trying to make any money. The first time I met a famous person was the drummer from Powderfinger. I was like 17 years old. I was in my first band.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so excited to meet Powderfinger, right? We're on the same bill, I think, or something like that. And I was chatting to him And he was obviously humoring me because I was a child. And I was like, so what do you do like when you're not on tour? Like, do you go on holidays or like thinking like, oh, he's a rock star. He's like, oh, no, I'll go back to being a an emergency teacher.
Fuck it up.
I'm like, what?
So sad.
He's like, yeah, yeah, I'm an emergency mate, PE it's teacher.
Powderfinger, man. I just want to wish you well.
Powderfinger. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not like.
It's fucked, man. Well, it's fucked. I mean, yeah, look, like there's. And that's just like scratching the surface about how bad it is because nobody trusts anyone to do it. And this is a thing like
that's why
like,
everything sucks because everything's made on like every decision about green lighting stuff is a safe decision.
A safe decision, but also what this producer's done, he's just gone, well, this person's funny, this person's funny, this person's funny. We'll chuck him in a room, we'll make him do funny stuff. Right, but the true best sketch comedy are the people who know each other,
yeah,
who have grown course. Together.
Yeah.
The Late Show, you know, Kids in the Hall,
Monty Python,
Auntie Donna. Like when yeah, Auntie Donna, like those guys come up, like, and this is the thing with Auntie Donna is that there's like six of them, right? Because they've got like a you know a filmmaker and like writer, whatever. Like, and so when they do gigs, they have to split it amongst all of them. They've done everything themselves. Do you know the amount of times they have been in talks with like the amount of pilots they've done.
Yeah.
The amount of talks they've had with ABC. Do you know
their
how
show
times?
Got made on Netflix?
Well, this is
there's
the
something.
Well,
there's
this is the thing. Do you know how many times that they have? And what's crazy is that when it comes to like doing pilots and that, putting in their own money, their own time. Like, how do you hold down a job to like pay rent because you're investing everything you've got to like. Make a pilot to give to a TV station to see if they want to do it. And then they'll fucking pass on it. And you've just spent money on this pilot.
Yeah, and the attitude from the vast majority of boomers who live in fucking Bunningsville in Australia are like, so you fucking should. Why should you get any of my money to make? It's like, well, what do you do when you get home from work?
Crazy.
Watch TV. And how do you think that TV gets made? Like, oh, fuck, I don't give a fuck.
Back in the day, you'd
get... I don't give a fuck, mate. It just fucking gets made. It's not my problem. Why should I have to...
Just bring changing rooms back. We'll be good. But back in the day, you'd get like 250 grand to like, you know, go away for 6 months, write a pilot, write a treatment for a series, film the pilot. But like these kids did it all on their own. And then fucking Netflix, Ed Helms from fucking Office and Hangover... got wind of them and got him a like help like, he produced the thing on Netflix, which is so great.
Because, and Scott Aukerman as well.
Oh, right. And I'm just like, that's so great, like good on them because it's like, fuck you ABC, fuck you free to air, fuck all you cunts.
Well, the ABC
who didn't
had,
want,
yeah.
No, but ABC were in on it. Like they turned them down multiple times.
I'm saying the ABC
well.
Has been systematically dismantled by the conservative side of politics in Australia over the last 15 years. So,
But you know what I mean? It's, like, they had to go to Netflix. Like, they had to, like, skip over everything, which is unheard of. Like, I don't know many people who skip over, like, free-to-air stuff first and go to Netflix. Like, it's crazy. And then ABC are like, oh, we'll give you some money. You're going to do another
show.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
You know, fuck you. Fuck you. It just makes me so mad that.
And the Netflix show, you know, like, the cafe show was fine, whatever, Coffee Time or whatever it's called. It was all right. But the Netflix show is genuinely great.
It's great.
I loved the Netflix show. I thought it was fantastic.
And they got heaps of like special guests in there. Like it just makes me really mad because it's like the amount of time and effort. Like the guys that did the Late Show in 92-93, like Working Dog, they never had to go through what Auntie Donna went through. Like they genuinely were doing radio, doing really well, really funny. They did, you know, 5 in a row. And then they got commissioned to do a pilot for Channel 9. Didn't get picked up. But then I did pilot for ABC, got picked up. And that's it. And that was all in a very, like, you know, 91, 92, 2 years. You know, it wasn't a long stretch of time. Auntie Donna had been doing this for 10 years before someone actually gave him a go and it was fucking Netflix. Go fuck yourselves, fucking people who don't want to give money to like take a chance. Do you know what I mean? Like take a fucking chance.
But it's because like I know I keep bringing up the same thing. The vast majority of people who live in this country don't care about.
They don't care
about the arts. Like they don't know how magically, you know, like
they
would see during the pandemic, you'd see it where you'd like musicians and comedians would be going on Facebook and be like, hey, I can't make any money right now. And people, like the vitriol that would come back at them of like, oh, why don't you get your fucking real job? Meanwhile, these people are sitting on their asses watching Netflix for 12 hours a day, not giving any thought into how anything is made.
It's funny because you're someone who's like been absorbed with comedy for so long as I have been, and I think that that's everything in the world. And then I talk to someone like, you know, Nick Cody, a good friend of mine who's doing breakfast radio with Fifi and Brendan Vivola. And he's like, it was so interesting to him to realize once he started getting really into breakfast radio how much Australia doesn't care about stand-up comedy.
Or films, like, or TV shows.
But his point was that, you know, we do – a month, like one of the biggest festivals in the world.
Mm-hmm.
There's three big festivals. It's Montreal, Edinburgh, Melbourne. That's it.
Yeah.
It goes for a month. It's huge. And it's like you build your whole year is about building that hour for that show and touring it. You go to Perth. You're on the road for 5-6 months. And someone like Cody's on the road heaps. And he's like, you do breakfast radio. And people are like, what do you do? And he's like, I do stand up. He's like, I've been on stand up for 15 years. I've been on Conan. Nick Cody's been on Conan, and he goes to breakfast radio and they're like, what do you do? Like, and it's not like a rude thing. It's just like, oh, stand up. Oh, yeah. Carl Barron's fun because there's something about the other echelon of Australia that they just don't notice it. But you know why they don't notice it? Because it's on the fucking telly, Damien. We don't have any Tonight shows. Tell me where a comedian in Australia could do 5 minutes of time on television.
It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. We have no Conan. We have no Letterman.
Again, because it's not guaranteed money. They'd rather buy an American Tonight show for cheap and put it on at midnight, like Colbert's on Channel 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, as an Australian comedian, you've got to do what Sam Campbell's done. You've got to go to the UK, break the UK, and then come back here. Yeah.
Tim Mitchum did the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it makes me really mad because it's like when people go, oh, Australian stand-up is shit or, you know, Australian's not funny. It's like we don't have an opportunity to show you anything. It's
the same with bands, man.
We don't have the opportunity to show you anything. There's no bands.
Smith Street Band, DZ Death Rays, like the Bennies. There are fucking rock bands in Australia at the moment that are some of the best bands the country's ever produced. And like Smith Street Band are kind of well-known, but again, there's nowhere. We don't even have fucking. I'm talking like I'm still in a band. We don't even have like recovery or anything anymore. No. There's not even like a way to get music to the youth.
No.
Triple J has been turned into like just another FM radio station because again, they've been told that they've got to compete with Fox and fucking Triple M or whatever the fuck. Because if they don't, they don't get the funding.
No wonder people are trying to get famous on TikTok.
Well, that's the only way around it. Then my TikTok algorithm is now filled with musicians bitching about how they have to advertise themselves on TikTok.
No, and that's
because they want to be writing songs and recording music, but they spend half of their time on fucking social media making like.
And if you're someone who's really good at stand up or. If you're someone who's really good at stand up or music and stuff, if you're bad at social media.
Yeah,
like
too bad.
Which is me, you know. It's like pull the plug because you're fucked. I'm like, I don't know how to do that stuff. Anyway, well, got to get with the times.
But this podcast is our golden ticket, baby. It's our golden ticket out of here, and it's doing real well.
Which one do you want to talk about?
Hang on, we haven't got to that yet. You're jumping around all over the place.
I know, but we can't make the podcast go for an hour and a half. Just spent 20 minutes
bitching about fucking stand up.
We can't go away for an hour and a half.
What else have you been watching?
I told you, Jack Reacher.
Okay, well, can I talk about what I've been doing?
Sure.
Oh, God, I'm only the co-host. Fucking hell. So I have started a VHS collection.
Oh, God.
So I got a VCR because I'm a cool guy and Quentin Tarantino told me to buy films on VHS, so I immediately went out and started doing that.
Got a VHS from my mum, Lena.
So I got a VCR from Lena Fustuca, number one fan of me, not necessarily Callie. She loves me. I don't know if she, like, she listens to the podcast and her favorite host is Damien. You know what I mean? Although every time she sees me, she punches me. So I'm not sure what that's about. So got a VCR from her, then had to spend hundreds of dollars on cords to like plug it into my TV. but the fun part about it is that you get to go on eBay and stuff and
And buy VHS?
And buy VHSs.
Yeah, I bought VHS. Sorry,
I'm just
VHS.
Distracted because you've literally got your phone in front of your
face.
Because
I'm looking up the Marvels TV show. I was bringing it up, see?
But I'm not getting any reactions from you or anything.
Because
you're like,
talking.
Uh-huh.
Because you're talking and I'm listening to you, you dumb shit. You're telling a story.
Anyway, so during the week, I watched the Sylvester Stallone film Cobra on VHS and it looked fucking great. Quentin was right. Because supposedly the thing, like, it's meant to, because the film, because essentially it's been printed from film to film, then, like, the film stock looks better, which, depending on the quality of the tape, that is true. But I think it loses a little bit. I would probably need to get an older TV, like a CRT TV, and then plug it into that. Or get a projector and then plug it into that and project it onto the wall.
Yeah, I bought you some VHS.
You did buy me VHS.
I found them at the op shop.
You got me Dirty Dancing, which I feel was a little bit like when Homer bought Marge the bowling ball.
No, I'm not a big fan of Dirty Dancing.
And you got me Muriel's Wedding, which again feels like Homer buying Marge the bowling ball. what else did you get me?
I got them because you're collecting VHS. I'm not going to watch them.
You got me Gladiator. You got me
On the Waterfront.
On the Waterfront, which is a great movie. Duh. Yeah, so I've just been watching a few VHSs, so I'll update you guys as the library starts to build.
Dun, dun. Dun, dun.
Do you remember the first VHS that you watched at your house? Or were you, like, did it already, because you had older brothers and sisters.
Yeah, but my mum used to always, like, tape Days of Our Lives when she was at work and come home to watch it.
But do you remember getting the VCR player?
Or no.
Was it just always there?
I think it was always there.
Right. No. Because I remember Dad bringing one home out of fucking nowhere. Mm. Out of nowhere. And I've talked about how strict Mum and Dad were about what we watched. And this completely opened up our lives. But I remember that because we went to the video store and the first thing we watched on it, which is pretty funny considering my dad and the fact that Mum was working that night, Vanessa and I got to hire kids' movies, but Dad hired the Blues Brothers. And because me and Ness were both into comedy, and he was like, you guys like comedy? I'll get this. It's one of the funniest movies I've ever seen, which we loved it. But in retrospect, thinking about it, I would have been like 9 and Vanessa would have been like 6. We should not have been watching the Blues, but like there's so much swearing in that film.
It's pretty
fun. It's fucking unbelievable. It like and if you met me and my sister, we swear like sailors. And I feel like that might be the origin story of us swearing every fucking word. Anyway, I still love that movie and has been pretty much the movie that I've bought. Every time there's been a change of technology, like VHS to DVD, I bought the Blues Brothers first. You know what I mean?
It's pretty great.
But anyway, this week I watched Cobra.
Yeah, nice. Good one. I knew you were watching it when I walked in the room because of that first scene in the grocery store.
Oh, it's amazing.
Come on, man.
You get to see like the Yeah, you get to see like the good thing about like old films in grocery stores or like shopping centers or whatever is it's just such a nostalgia trip. You know what I mean? Of like, oh, yeah, that's what Pepsi cans looked like then. You know what I mean? Or like, oh, the Americans have more than one M&M flavor. Like, I remember going to America when we were kids and like seeing that there were like 5 or 6 different Skittles flavors in Hawaii. And it like, my sister and I couldn't talk about anything else for like a day.
America's so wow, man.
We loved it.
Man.
Vanessa and I were immediate converts to the States. We just fucking loved everything about it. Video games, baseball, fucking 18 different types of fucking Fanta. This is the best.
All right.
God, you're such an impatient Nelly this morning.
Keep going about
VHS. That's it.
Okay. Mate, it's past 30 minutes. We've got to start talking about
TV. You spent 20 minutes talking about Sketched.
It was 6 minutes.
26 minutes. Anyway, what have we been watching this week?
So we watched The Marvels, the film, which is, I think earlier, we talked about the TV show, Ms. Marvel?
We talked about it ages ago. I don't know if we talked about Ms. Marvel, actually.
I don't know. Anyway, well, this is
we
the
definitely
movie
watched
part
it.
Of, This is the movie part of it. And it has Captain Marvel in it and Ms. Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of, like, if anything, is kind of a sequel to the Captain Marvel.
It's a sequel to the Captain Marvel movie, yes. But it's also kind of a sequel to the Ms. Marvel TV show.
Yes, it is.
And it's also kind of a sequel to WandaVision.
Yes.
Because Monica Rambeau, the black Captain Marvel, is in WandaVision as well.
And Monica, what's her name? Monica Rambeau. I was watching it and it wasn't until the end that I realized she played Dawn in Mad Men. So you're a big fan of Mad Men, and it's incredible the difference of like what she looks like in Mad Men compared to this movie.
Mm.
Like I was like, I had to try and go back and look at pictures because I'm like, how is this the same person? It's not that she's had like work done or anything like that. It's just like,
a completely different context.
Yeah, but incredible. Incredible. This is good. I liked it.
I enjoyed the Marvels. Yeah, I'm so up and down with Marvel shit at the moment. Yeah, like
they're really milking it,
aren't
they?
We just did Echo, which we really enjoyed. It was a different tone. This is a completely different tone again.
Mm.
Very upbeat, very comic booky.
Funny.
Funny at times. Mm. It felt like the cast liked each other.
Cute.
The stakes of the film, even though it is set in the middle of space, are kind of small. It's sort of like there's a rip in the time-space continuum and it needs to be closed.
Yeah, but every time it kind of opens, I mean, it is a small, yeah, it's small it's stake because they're actually just destroying a whole like a whole world of people. But yeah, that's a small stake, I would say.
Well, like, for Marvel films, yes, in comparison to like Thanos who destroyed half the universe and it's a smaller story. But that doesn't even really matter. Like, it's kind of the MacGuffin of the film. Like, what I enjoyed about the film is the whole cast seemed to be enjoying themselves. It was a very light, funny, fluffy, friendly tone. The demographic is, like, you know, women under 25, and they nailed that. But anybody can kind of watch it, you know, like...
Yeah.
The only criticisms that I have is that Sam Jackson... So, there was a really short, like, limited series called Secret Invasion. Which was kind of the beginning of this storyline. So the Skrull and the Kree or whatever who were fighting amongst themselves, that story started on Secret Invasion. And on that, probably the worst thing Marvel's done. And in that, Samuel Jackson is angry, brooding, treating everybody like shit. And then this story is right after it, like in the MCU timeline. And he's like cracking jokes. He's got his eye patch back on, which he wasn't wearing in the last show. He's like completely like having fun and loving life, even though all these tragic events happened in Secret Invasion. That was the only thing that like, if you hadn't been watching that, who cares? But like it was just jarring, the tone, like the tonal shift for Nick Fury in this show compared to the last one.
But so I don't know anything about that, so I didn't notice it.
No, you wouldn't have if you hadn't watched it. But I'm just saying like, for someone who ends up watching everything Marvel does, which is starting to become a chore rather than something enjoyable, even though some of it is quite fun to watch, it feels like even they are losing track of...
The girl who plays Ms. Marvel, she's really sweet.
She's great.
I find her really easy to watch, and she's got a real innocent likability about her where she's kind of a goofball. And the whole thing about, because she's a young kid and she's actually... In this universe, everyone knows Captain Marvel, and she like has pictures of her in her room, and she loves her, like she looks up to her. So when she meets her, she's like, "You know my name," like, but not in a facetious way. It's like in a really cute, like, she's like, "Are we gonna be best friends?" Like, and it's just really sweet. It's really sweet, and the storyline's interesting because there is someone who has a genuine, you know, cracks to burn with Ms. Marvel and stuff like that, and you know, the family are fun. Her family, her Pakistani family.
Yeah,
her and the brother, like the mum's just like standing in front of her, like the brother going, "This is a nice place to bring a, you know, to get married, bring a girlfriend back." Yeah,
like the mum wants Miss Marvel's brother to like
settle
ask out Captain Marvel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's just like,
she's a nice girl. Yeah. You could ask her.
And it's just funny because then, like, they're unpacking a whole bunch of boxes, he finds, like, a remote control, and he's just trying to, like, he's just pressing the remote control in front of the mum just to, like, shut up, mum.
Yeah.
But it's, like, such a beautiful, like, typical immigrant parents where they're, like, getting mad about, you know, like, typical immigrant parents where they're, like, got to get a good job, got to settle down, got to get a good job, got to settle down. Anyway, so that movie, I reckon, I don't know, maybe 3.5 grumps on this one?
I'm giving it 2.5.
Okay.
I think it was good.
Yeah, I feel like it deserves, maybe just 3. Just because the Marvel stuff is getting really drowned out now. But it's funny. I'm going to give it 3.5 because it's under 100 minutes. It actually goes for like an hour and a half,
which is exactly
what
should be happening. And it does set up, I mean, it's been coming for a really long time, but they are setting up the Young Avengers, which I really liked that comic. I thought it was a fun comic. So that'll have Ms. Marvel, Hawkeye, like the girl version of Hawkeye, Spider-Man, a whole bunch of other people in it.
Yeah.
Echo will probably be in it as well.
Yeah, so that'd be good.
Yeah, so... they just keep on keeping on, Marvel, but I feel like the momentum has
really Captain Marvel too skinny. Too skinny, mate. Yeah,
Brie Larson.
And stop putting padding in her boobs. You don't have in real life her boobs aren't that big. She hasn't had her boobs done. Stop putting padding in the outfits of women who are obviously very slim and giving this illusion that they've got tits. It's okay. They can just be their real selves.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck is with that? Like, she's literally clothes hanging off her. She's tiny. Yeah, she's wearing a white singlet and massive tits. I'm like, no. Like, there's no cleavage because she's, you know, flat because she's skinny.
Yeah, it looks weird.
And it looks weird. It's like so old school. Maybe I'll give it a 3 because that really pissed me off. Like I was genuinely like watching it going, why? Why are you giving her big boobs? We don't need that.
Why are you giving her the bigger boobs?
Why are you giving her the bigger boobs?
Hey, Marvel, why are you giving her the big... Hey, Google.
Google.
Why are you giving her the bigger boobs?
Hey, Google. Ha. A Google. Okay.
Google, hi.
Let's move on to the next one because I've got lots to say.
Well, what was the other title that we watched?
So the next thing we watched was Griselda. It's on Netflix. And it's the story of Griselda Blanco. Griselda Blanco, if you don't know the story of Griselda Blanco, she in the Miami in the late 70s, early 80s, she was the godmother and she was brutal. She ran... The people say that she ran the cocaine trade in Miami much, much more than Pablo Escobar. He was like, you know, change. Like, I don't know. Like, this is what the people say, is that Pablo was like, he was around, but he wasn't fucking moving shit like Griselda was.
Mm-hmm.
And Griselda was a fucking beast. She did not give a fuck about anybody. The story with her is that, like, if they wanted to kill a guy, they were like, make sure you get in when he's with his family and get rid of the whole family. Like 2-year-old son, make sure he dies too. Like she really made, she's like, I want you to spray that. Like there was a thing where Ravi, her assassin, was like, she's like, I want you to take out that guy and he's going to be here, do it here. And he's like, oh, there's going to be a lot of people around. She goes, I don't care, spray the whole table. He's like, but they got nothing to do with it. It's a table of 10 people. She goes, no, you spray the whole table. They all die. So everyone needs to know you can't even associate with, like, she just, like, the – because it was – everything was kind of fine. Like, people were just making money off drugs, but she made it so that it started – this is when the cocaine war started. Anyway, one of my favorite documentaries in the whole wide world is Cocaine Cowboys, and it tells you the story of it, and it's fantastic. So I was excited that they were making something about her – but they very much, like, shock horror, they missed the mark. Shock, shock, horror. They missed the mark. What do you think, Damien?
Yeah, look, I wasn't – usually I'm not really into these kind of stories at all. Anything to do with, like, true crime or true stories that get made into miniseries or series or whatever, I'm not that interested in. But I don't know. There was enough happening on this to keep me interested in watching. There was enough happening to watch the first episode. I don't think I would watch any more of it. After I'm finding that more and more with like almost every TV show on a streamer. It's like I watched the first episode. I'm like, it's pretty good. And then I go off and watch other things.
Yeah, I feel like with this one here, because it's got the biggest draw they've got is Sofia Vergara.
Yeah.
One of the things that this show does do really well, which I highly respect, is it looks like it's it's Netflix, so it's American kind of money and stuff. The majority of the show is in Espanol in subtitles.
Mm.
And they go back to the police, it's in English. Like when she is talking with her people, they're not putting on, you know, like the Spanish, you know, just so we, because it's a, you know, a show that's going to be shown to English speaking people. So one thing they do that is very good is that even when they're in Miami, when people are talking to each other, they're still talking to each other in Espanol. Like they're not. What tends to annoy me when they do shows like this is that they'll talk to each other like, hey, buenos dias, why are you coming in my car? Like, I can't do an accent. Like, everyone has an accent, which kind of like makes it like they're, you know, it's like, hey, we're not going to make people speak Spanish so that you can watch it with no subtitles, but we'll put the accent on. It's like when you watch Scarface, you know? And he goes, and it's obvious they all like English is their second language. And he goes in and he's like, I got the stuff. It's in the car. Do you got the stuff? Like there's that thing and it's dumb. But this show really does like it's all majority of its subtitles. And then when it's supposed to be in English, it's in English, which I've respected. But this story is such a good story, man. And they start off at the beginning, but they should really show us. They start off at the beginning and I don't think it really justifies how good this story is. They should have started off in like the early 80s and shown where she was. Like they should have started it showing us this is where she's at. This is what's happening. This is where she's at. And then they can go back and tell the story about how she got there, because I have watched like 5 episodes now and I can tell you that they haven't even touched the surface in 5 episodes, you know, about how much of a stronghold she had on Miami. How much, like, the skyscrapers that got built in Miami was because of the cocaine trade that she was a part of. Like, the whole skyline, you know. And there was one point in Miami where you couldn't touch a note, any 1, 5, 10 note of currency without finding a trace of cocaine on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like people were walking into dealerships buying my Mercedes with $30,000 cash. Banks couldn't hold cash because it was too much cash.
Yeah,
like that. This story, and there was one moment in the TV show where she's getting her hair done, and the chick next to her is reading a Time magazine piece, and the Time magazine cover has Paradise Lost on it, and it's a very, very famous thing. It's like in Australia where they had that sort of article about the lucky country, like someone with a question mark, and people go, oh, the lucky country, you know. With this one here, when that Time article came out and it was like Paradise Lost, like it was like a nice little like in the story where I was like, oh yeah, that's when Time did that piece about Miami in like 82, 83, whenever it was. That's when everyone really woke up and went, oh fuck, this is like there were banks, like they opened up their own banks. You understand? Like they opened up their own banks, and one of the ways they're able to fuck with people is by putting like $20,000 in like a cop's bank account.
Yeah,
you know, and he's like, I don't know this person who gave me this money. I don't know this. Like how? Like they're like, well, you're getting paid off. I haven't been getting paid off. But also on the other thing, because crime was so bad, they started recruiting heaps of police because they needed them. And there was like a whole thing about, okay, so you can only join the police force if you have never had a record. And then they're like, okay, so you can do it if you haven't had a record in 2 years. And they're like, if you haven't been in jail in the last 2 weeks, you can join. Like, they needed police. And then the corruption within the police was just gigantic. And the thing is, this show, what a waste. Like, it was fine. You said you liked it.
Yeah. I mean, it was fine. It wasn't offensive or anything. It kept me like, I watched it all the way through and I wasn't like, oh, this is a chore. But I could barely tell you. I could barely tell you what happened. I thought Sophia, whatever her name is, was pretty good in it.
Yeah.
Especially in comparison to Modern Family, which I've never understood what the attraction is in that show. Funny. But it's not. But it's not. It's just fucking formulaic bullshit.
I feel like if you want to know this story, just watch Cocaine Cowboys. Watch the original doco. It goes for like 2 hours and like it has all the stuff about her. Like about her assassin, and all the people they talk to, everyone's like, it wasn't Pablo, it was her. She was the godmother.
Yeah.
She was ruthless. Like, she was like, make sure you kill their baby. Like, she was awful. And one of the cops that they interview a lot, he was like, he kept on trying to get her and he couldn't get her. And then one time he goes, she like slipped through his fingers again. Like, she was so good at protecting herself. And he said to her, he goes, I'm going to get you one day. I'm going to go over to you. I'm going to put the cuffs on you. I'm going to give you a kiss on the cheek just to say goodbye. You know, like, and she was like, yeah, we'll see. And then a few years later he was the one who arrested her.
Right.
And he gave her a kiss on the cheek. He goes, I told you. Like, it was just, but it took him, you know what I mean? And there was cops that were like following through on this for years who ended up retiring. They couldn't, because they didn't get her for a long time. But this is what I wanted to show you, right?
Mm.
So it's really, I mean, good on Sophia Vergara for like doing this because this is a big change for her. But she's, you know, she's like 50-something. She's oodles of sexy. She's gorgeous. And in one of the episodes you didn't see, she's having sex with her husband and they've got like a shot from back. And she's fucking ripped, like her back and her arms. She's toned as all fuck. And it's like she's topless, but it's from behind. So you don't see her boobs, but you see the outline of her boobs. Holy aruga! Boing! Dude! Like, you don't see the nipple, but you see the side boob. Dude, she got the biggest boobs I've ever seen. And you know they're natural.
Mm.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I wanted to show you a picture of the real Griselda Blanco.
Okay.
Because she's gorgeous.
All right.
Okay. Oh, oops, a daisy. That is a real picture of Griselda.
Oh, my God. Lena?
No, it's not Lena. It's my Nuna, Reda. Griselda Blanco is, like, in real life, is, like, 4'9", chubby, grey hair, curly, if you're square listening, face.
Listeners, you've got to look up the real Griselda and dude. Fucking Sophia, whatever her face is.
At least try. Cast someone that kind of looks like it, because this is the thing.
It's like Ryan Gosling playing Danny DeVito in the Danny DeVito story.
Honestly, Danny, and this is the thing, because this show kind of points around a lot about, like, I don't, like, I'm going to do the accent. Like,
Why do the accent?
Because it just adds to what they're doing. I'm not making fun of the people, the accent, I'm making fun of the TV show, because it's like, they'll have, like, side drug dealers going, I don't take no advice from a woman. Like, right. That's the rhetoric going around, because she's this sexy ass bitch with these high heels on, tight dress, gold chain. She comes in smoking with her deep red lipstick on and she's like, listen, we're going to sell the cocaines.
Hmm.
You know, there's all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I don't listen to a bitch. I'll fuck you, but I won't fuck you. Like that kind of stuff. If Griselda Blanco walks through the door and she's like, you're like, fuck, I'm scared of this bitch. She's a scary looking. She might be like 5 foot. She's a scary looking motherfucker. Like,
yeah, she is.
There's a distinctive difference. I just think casting wise, they could have done better. But she was also a producer, so I guess you're going to put yourself in your own TV show.
Yeah, of course. Right? Listen, it's a TV show, so like, put some sex appeal in there.
Yeah.
Like, just please. We need more of that in films and TV. Like,
I mean, you see some boobies and stuff in this a little bit.
like some fucking some sex scenes. And
no,
like
I hate sex scenes.
Come on, Jesus
no,
Christ.
No, I don't like them. I don't like them.
Give us something.
Listen, I'm going to.
Everything's so fucking tame and boring.
I'm actually going to rewatch Cocaine. I've watched Cocaine Cowboys 50 times. I'm actually going to watch it again. I would love for you to watch it with me so that you could be.
I know, baby. You've said.
But just so you could be as enthusiastic about this story. Because when we were talking to the Knicks the other day, and they were really interesting with it. They were really, they said a really interesting thing, both of them separately, where they were like, you know, boy, we're talking about biopics, and it's like, yeah, you know, it's fine because you can't, like an interesting person is not better than an interesting story. Like an interesting story is everything. The person doesn't make the story. The story
yeah,
does.
Just because someone... Just because someone's famous doesn't mean that their story is interesting.
Right. Yeah. And that's – yeah, and I kept on thinking about that, and I just feel like this story, this whole story about this back and forth and stuff that happened with the Cocaine Cowboy stuff, I feel like that is such an interesting story. Like, like I don't want to bore you by going into it now, but like some of the – and this, the fact that this TV show – I mean, I think I've watched 5 episodes and I'm just like, maybe because I'm such a nerd, I know so much about the real story. I'm like, well, what about this? Where's this guy? Well, where's that guy? Where's John? Where's the fucking, there's a whole amazing story about, because the way that they got the drugs in was there was a pilot, this big like redneck, what was he called? Like Mikey or Mickey or something. And he had this like big mullet. And he would fly the cocaine over.
Mm.
But what would happen is they would drop it into the ocean.
Right.
And with like kind of beaker, like they'll put like little like beakers in there so they could find it. So the guy would fly over, put it in, fly back, throw it out into the ocean, and then they have people would come in on the boat and like
scoop it
out. Yeah, and then scoop it out. And then like, but also how they hid, like they would have like this car and this car and this car, like swap cars along the way, swapping houses. Like one house would only be used for like a month and then they'd move on.
Mm.
Like it was just such a well-oiled, and this is the thing, is like it was such a well-oiled machine and everyone was making money. It was just crazy. But then when people tried to fuck with her because they were like, fuck this bitch, we want to make money now too, that's when things went crazy because her machine like worked. I mean, she was the only one getting rich though.
Right.
But does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, really. It's, but just the stuff about the like the skyline, like at one point, like the cop goes, I just like came over a hill and just saw like 147 cranes in the air.
Because
this skyline's getting built and it's all built on cocaine. Like it was just, and then when the, it all kind of like died down, like in 88, you know, into the 90s, Miami was just like a ghost town. It was great, like all these buildings, like empty, blah blah. And it took time to like rebuild it to now being the thriving metropolis that it is today. Very interesting, man.
Mm.
I'm gonna rewatch it, man. Fuck it. Yeah. And even, can I just say one more thing?
Yeah.
So the her assassin Ravi, he's in jail right now, and then he, in the documentary, he's the best. He's so good. The way he's just really open about talking about people who are killed and all this stuff. And then they did an update where he was in jail and then he ended up getting more time because he kept on calling his lawyer and kept on calling his lawyer and the secretary that his lawyer had, they ended up having an affair.
Oh, really?
Like, it was just so funny. Like, they just showed his footage of, like, and he's, like, he's tall and an old man, but he's, like, a real suave, like, you know, always, you know, never had problems getting ladies, was married with kids, but whatever, you know.
Mm.
But just, like, he got in more trouble and had to go back to court. Because he was having phone sex with his lawyer's secretary. He's like 65, fucking drug dealer, assassin in jail, but still this chick was like, man, how fucking suave do you have to be to get that kind of like secretary puss?
It's pretty easy for me. So how many stars? I mean grumps.
I give it 2 grumps. I give it 2 grumps. And the only reason why it's not 1.5 is because – the fact that the majority of the film, an American-made film.
Series,
is in subtitles. Like, they, like, I felt like that was super authentic. They're not doing the fake accents. They generally, you speak English when you speak English and you speak Spanish when you speak Spanish. Like, this is exactly how, and that was very true.
Yeah.
But there's, it's very showboaty. Get to the story, you know, and they talk about the Ochoas. And I talk a little bit about, you know, Escobar, blah, blah, because they were just around the thingo. But she really had a massive issue with the Ochoas, but they really didn't – they did not explain. It's like if – it's like they're doing a show as if you know the story. You know the story?
Yeah.
So there's all these holes. I'm like, no. If I didn't know the story, I'd be like, we're all over the place. What is this shit? They have not explained it enough for the people that don't know the stories.
Maybe they're going to explain it later. But, yeah, I don't know. I'll give it 2 grumps. It was, like, compelling enough to keep me watching.
Mm.
I think I kind of just liked hanging out in that world. I think they really went out of their way to try and make it feel like 1980
100%.
Miami.
Yeah.
It is funny now in 2024 of, like, when they do, like, panning shots or establishing shots. There was one scene where, like, Griselle's going to, like, a bar to find this guy who's stolen cocaine off him, off her. And, like, there's all the cars in the street. Muscle cars or sport cars because they're the only cars from that time that have been maintained. There's no like Dodge Plymouths or
like broken down looking piece of garbage.
Yeah, there's no like Griswold station wagon.
Yeah, where are
you
they?
Know what I mean? Like, well, because no one kept them because
like a dirty car with mud flaps. You know?
Why would anyone, you know, like my car, I have a car now, guys. My car is a Suzuki SX4. Why would anyone keep that? You know, no one's going to maintain that.
Yeah, with a broken side mirror and stuff. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Like, no one's going to do it up and maintain it because it's just a little, like, it's just a little hatchback four-wheel drive that, like, gets around. You know what I mean? Like,
I do love your theory about whenever something goes back in time and it's like, the what's it, like, what do you call it? Like, the timestamp?
They hit the 80s button.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is.
I came in, you were watching a later episode today and, like, she's having a party and it's just like,
Let's dance.
Yeah, and they play Let's Dance by David Bowie, right? And, like, it's a party and people are dancing, so, okay, I suppose. Like, but to me, as someone who has studied film, I don't know if I mentioned it, you know it's establishing music, right? And it's just so fucking heavy-handed of, like, it's 1984 now because this song came out in 1984.
What were we watching where that was just so prevalent? It was so annoying.
It was it Air?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it was Air. Oh, man, maybe it was a TV show. But
Air did it a lot where they were just hitting the fucking 80s button.
Yes,
like,
we get it.
80s needle drop of like,
yeah.
It's hip to be square.
Yeah.
Banana. You know, it's like, okay, we get it. It's 1987.
Actually, like, it's funny because I was listening to. I was listening to Tuesdays with Stories this week and Joe actually said a very similar thing where he's like, I like remember listening to it going, oh, fuck, I wish I could be in this conversation and go, yes. He's like, I hate it because it says the pressy 80s button. And he goes, and I hate it when they do a tongue-in-cheek thing where it's like they'll say something like, make sure you bring your camera. Oh, no, it'll be like, make sure you bring your camera. Oh, man, this camera is so heavy. I wish you had a camera that could just fit in your pocket. Or like, you know what I mean? I need a map. Wouldn't it be great if they put maps on a computer in your pocket? Or it's something about the future, like the internet or like, you know, like there'll never be a black president.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff like that. And you just go, oh, the tongue in cheek, wink to camera. I go, shut up, idiots.
I mean, I would when I was like growing up dreaming of like writing stuff, I would be like, oh, if I ever wrote a film, I would put this song in it and I'd put this song in it. But the reason why it was never done is because an actual pop song is quite overbearing. You know what I mean? It was always used really sparingly. But the best example I can think of is, I blame Sly for this because the Rocky films is really where this started. Like montages with a rock song in the back of it, and it slowly crept more and more into films. But like. Karate Kid, what's the I am the man
who will fight for
you. Was that Karate Kid
2? I reckon it's 2.
And it's only used once in the film, right? Yeah. And it's used to a good effect where it shows the romance between Daniel and whoever his girl is in that film.
Yeah.
or whatever's happening. There's a montage or whatever. And then the rest of the time, there's a score. A score works in a film because it doesn't detract from what's happening on screen. It adds to it. A pop song, a rock song, is its own thing. So it's like completely... When I was watching Griselle this morning and there was that David Bowie song, it completely took me out of it because I'm like, oh, that is David Bowie. You know what I mean? Like,
It just
feels really... like
do something a little bit more
and
less
the
known.
The bigger the song or the bigger the artist, the more it takes you out of it, I think, you know? Unless it's like Prince writing music for Batman, that where it's like it's cool because he's writing it for the film, so it's a score. But if like you were just watching a rom-com and all of a sudden Prince came on, my brain would be like, oh, I'm now listening to Purple Rain by Prince.
You can't be
I'm not watching a movie.
You're right. They can't use a song that's so big like Bowie. Like, do a real, like, you got to do something a little less.
It would be like casting Brad Pitt as like a side character, like a guy at the newsstand who hands Ryan Gosling a paper. You know what I mean? It's like, why is Brad Pitt? And he just goes, there's your paper, man. You know, or busy day, you know it. Good to see you. And then Ryan Gosling goes off with his day and you're like, why the fuck was Brad Pitt just like...
You say Brad Pitt and all I can think of is our friend who takes his kid to childcare and there's a really hot dad there and they call him Dad Pitt. I still love about that. Dad Pitt. He's dad so Pitt. Hot.
Man, if someone else hadn't already come up with that term and I thought of it, it would be the best sketch character.
I just had to look up the montage song for Rocky IV and it's Hearts on Fire.
Yeah, Rocky IV. But like, is what Karate Kid 2, is that I'm the man that will fight for your honor?
I'm pretty sure
whatever?
It's karate because I don't think he has a big...
No, I don't think... Because that movie, having watched it a couple of times recently, it's not a huge budget, Karate Kid 1. Like, it's shot well.
Glory of Love?
Yeah.
The Glory of Love. That song.
Yes. Which Karate Kid movie is it? Two. Okay, great.
Yeah. No, is there a love interest in one? I don't think
so.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, he gets together with, is it Elizabeth Shue?
No, he gets together with Mr. Miyagi, doesn't he?
Yes. Daniel and Mr. Miyagi make out at the end of Karate Kid 1.
Kissy,
wax
kissy.
On, wax off.
Now touch my dick.
My dick.
Wax on my dick. Wax on my fucking dick. Is there anything I can use for a soundbite in this episode?
No, you must use your head, not your heart.
Yeah, I'll use my head. Yeah.
Fox said, damn.
Karate. Dun. Anyway, so yeah, I really want the Griselda thing to work, but I don't think anyone can do it. But it was the same people that made Narcos, which was big. I never watched it, but it had Pedro Pascal in it. Hot dog.
I love Narcos with a little bit of jalapenos on it. Fucking
yeah. All right.
Mate, we put ourselves in the comedy section of the podcast store. We've got to fucking make some jokes. You know what I mean?
God. All right. I might need to go to the toilet.
Simpsons. Ba-ba-ba-da-da. Simpsons. Ba-ba-ba-da-da.
Huh?
Remember we sang that song last week? It's been in my head the whole week.
No.
Yeah, we like we did a mashup of fucking I Dream of Jeannie and Simpsons.
No, that must have been The Other Wife.
We did. It's did fucking we? It's recorded. Go back. I know you
Baby,
don't listen
I need to go to the toilet.
I know that's usually the siren for the end of the episode.
Oh god.
But it's just obvious that you don't listen to our episodes back.
Jimmy, tell Dad I got to go to the toilet.
Too busy listening to other fucking people's podcasts rather than
Okay, thank you for listening, everybody.
Thank you for listening to everybody besides Kelly, who obviously doesn't listen.
I do listen to it.
Listenership is up again. This is amazing.
Thanks,
we love you guys. Keep telling
friends.
Hey, we got a whole bunch of reviews this week and on Apple Podcasts. Most of them are really positive. Thank you. One person gave us one star. Fuck you.
That's not a real person. That's just someone fucking with me.
Well...
From my past.
Yeah, you got multiple enemies.
I got people in my past who fucking hate me. They don't even hate me. They're just like, and they just sort of fuck with us. So that's shit. So
fuck
if you could leave a five,
shit.
If you could leave a 5-star review to like,
yes,
kind of get us up
Look,
there.
You know
that'd
what?
Be great.
This is what you can do for us this week. Go on Apple Podcasts. Don't worry about doing it anywhere else. Go on Apple Podcasts and give us 5 stars to get us back up to as close to 5 as possible. We'll never be able to get 5 now because of this fucking asshole. But if we can get up to 4.8, 4.9, we're at 4.3 right now. So if we can, because of this fucking guy. So like we got a bunch of reviews, all of them five mean. Except for one.
We don't even
one.
Make money off it.
Like, yeah, it's we just, do it for free. We make no money. Like we
lose money because you got to pay to put it on the staff and whatever.
Yeah, but anyway. So if you guys could do that, we're genuinely asking this week, please. That would be great. Because once it gets to a certain score, it goes into the new and noteworthy on iTunes. And then guys. People
will listen. Love you very much.
We love you guys. I love you.
I love you.
We'll talk to you next week.